Imagine, if you will, a couple of buskers on a street corner of New York City at the height of the Great Depression. It's a forlorn-sounding duet they're offering, but there's something hopeful about the tune. And once you've added the words, "The sun'll come out tomorrow," you've got something to be optimistic about. It was a touch of genius of composer Charles Strauss to preface his biggest Broadway hit with a haunting pre-echo of the show's most enduring number, "Tomorrow." The choice of instruments alone, solo trumpet and trombone, had the stamp of a real composer on it. And Strauss, whose 80th birthday we celebrate here and now, is a real composer. The show, of course, was Annie, book by Thomas Meehan, lyrics Martin Charnin, a project that was begun at the time of America's second Great Depression, the presidency of Richard Nixon, and was always going to have to be more than a maybe. Little Orphan Annie, a.k.a. Andrea McArdle, contemplating an uncertain future at the start of one of the biggest hits in Broadway history. Who'd have thought that when lyricist Martin Charnin strolled into a midtown Manhattan bookshop in search of Christmas gifts and left with a copy of Harold Gray's classic comic strip, that this particular gift would be ours too? But the melody of that song maybe tells you why. It's Charles Strauss's gift to write singable, aspirational tunes that are actually far more sophisticated than they might at first appear. But Strauss, and that's O-U-S-E for anyone thinking Viennese waltzes, had serious ambitions when he graduated from the celebrated Eastman School of Music and began studying with one of the founding fathers of American music, Aaron Copland. He didn't foresee then that his future direction might be signposted along the Great White Way. But that was before he met lyricist Lee Adams. Sometime after, the phone rang and it was Copland, telling him that there was an off-Broadway show playing in town by a composer of the same name. "I'd think about changing yours if I were you, Charlie," said Copland. Charlie put him straight. But did all that textbook counterpoint go to waste? Did it, hell?
Johnson, can I?
The Telephone Hour, a cracking scene setter, counterpoint that rocks from Charles Strauss and Lee Adams' first Broadway hit, Bye Bye Birdie. It was a risky idea, this musical about the jiving 50s playing in the rockin' 60s. It was doubly risky because it had its fun at the expense of a real-life phenomenon. The king of rock himself, Elvis, thinly disguised as one Conrad Birdie. In 1958, America's youth went into meltdown at the news that Presley was being drafted into the US Army. Pop hero turned action hero? Doubtful, but if the phrase had been invented then, it was good spin. It was also the basis for a lovable satire on growing pains in the age of going steady. Strauss himself remembers that feeling well, and he had a song in mind.
I thought, gee, this is something that should appeal to a lot of young girls and boys, and I was trying to get in that groove. It's a little rangy, but the sentiment that Lee projects in the lyric is right down the alley, as we say, about one boy forever and ever. And I tried to convey that kind of sincerity and feeling, which is still a part of me today, you know, that first girl or that first boy in your life that you'll never forget. There is a moment in time, and I wanted this song to crystallize it, where this is forever, for always.
Girls of Bye Bye Birdie on the one boy that might or might not live up to the exacting standards of the gyrating hipster himself, Conrad Birdie. Never mind the draft, settling down was a far scarier prospect. So many chicks, so little time. Or as the song goes, a lot of living to do. The drive of the rhythm says it all. This is a Strauss number with a racing adolescent pulse.
There are chicks just ripe for some kissing, and I mean to kiss me a few. Man, those chicks don't know what they're missing. I got a lot of living to do. Sizzling steaks all ready for tasting, and there's Cadillacs all shiny and new. Gotta move, 'cause time is a-wasting. There's such a lot of living to do.
There are men of 19 or 20 who are suave and reckless and true. Older men who give a girl plenty.
Music to play, places to go, people to see. Everything for you and me. Crazy clothes and motorboat races.
Some are nice and you have a lot to do. Broadway lights and wide open spaces. There's such a lot of living.
One of the great numbers that helped secure Bye Bye Birdie the Tony Award for Best Musical back in 1960. Astonishingly, it was a show that came from nowhere. The advance was a princely $200. Its writers had no track record, and even one of its stars, Dick Van Dyke, was making his Broadway debut. But he put on a happy face, collected a Tony Award for doing so, and launched a highly successful TV career. Not to mention Mary Poppins and that Cockney accent. For Charles Strauss, the big time beckoned. A composer had arrived on Broadway who could inhabit a very particular musical style while still asserting his own highly individual voice. The songs in Birdie weren't just good, they were so authentic it was uncanny. In fact, Strauss took his research so seriously that he even managed an actual teeny bopper hit, Born Too Late, 2 summers before Birdie opened. But we're worlds away from bobby socks and ponytails with this next song. Could it really be the same composer? Actually, it might just be the most beautiful melody Strauss ever penned. And never mind that Ray Bolger, the nimble dancer-comedian who first performed it, was no singer. Melodies like this virtually sing themselves.
Once upon a time, a girl with moonlight in her eyes put her hand in mine and said she loved me so. But that was once upon a time, very long ago. Once upon a hill, we sat beneath a willow tree, counting all the stars and waiting for the dawn. But that was once upon a time. Now the tree is gone. How the breeze ruffled through her hair, how we always laughed as though tomorrow wasn't there. We were young and didn't have a care. Where did it go? Once upon a time, the world was sweeter than we knew. Everything was ours. How happy we were then. But somehow, once upon a time, never comes again.
Once Upon a Time from Strauss and Adams' All American, a song so rosy with nostalgia that getting older is a little more inviting. You wonder if the folks that live on the hill are neighbours. Then suddenly we're in Harlem, where backstreet gyms play host to young black men with dreams. You can all but smell the blood, sweat and tears of their progress downtown. It's the world of Clifford Odets' award-winning play Golden Boy, a world that Strauss, Lee Adams, and pretty soon Sammy Davis Jr. would know well.
It was a memory, a sense memory, which I carried with me very deeply from these visits to the gyms in Harlem, where these poor, formerly poor, and wonderful boxers, I mean, there's so much to say about boxers. They're a great, great breed of people, respectful, gentle. Practically every boxer I've known, I never met what's his name? Mike Tyson. And I hear he's a different breed. I'm not sure that's the every other boxer I met, and I met all the great ones during the day, they were very gentle. But anyway, those sounds stayed with me. And I improvised it for Lee. And then he said, yeah, oh, I see. He said, but how do we show it to Sammy? And I said, gee, I don't know. I mean, how do you show such a number? And I remember the first time we played it for Sammy, I said, now, look, this is a very difficult number to show you, because Sammy had approval of everything. And I said, but okay, here goes. And I went, and Sammy fell off the bench. He said, what is that? You know?
Semi-final in the garden, make 150 bucks.
And that's what I call packing a few punches at the top of a show. If you're talking about a score that doesn't just talk the talk, but walks the walk of an entire culture, then Golden Boy is it. The way that Strauss got right under the soulful skin of Black America reveals not just an understanding, but a passion for the music that is its lifeblood. Sammy Davis Jr. was a handful. The show's greatest asset was also its most unpredictable element. On one occasion, Strauss was summoned to the steam room in a Las Vegas hotel, where he found himself discussing the finer points of the show in the company of Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Kahn, all naked. But Sammy Davis's promise to stick around wasn't idle, and despite succumbing to bouts of laryngitis in both New York and London, when he was on, boy, was he on.
Stick around, things are gonna happen. Fireworks, stick around and see. Watch me in the arena eat Cracker Jack while I'm smacking some hack for a fee. Stick around, you can hold the basket while I shake that money tree. And of course, in certain cases, a dark horse may win some races. Stick around, lady, and see. Stick around, and you'll see some action. Who can tell what the kid will do? Here I go after diamonds, and I'll come back with a sack full and toss you a few. Stick around, you can shine my trophies, lead the cheers when they shout for me. There won't be nobody hotter, I want the whole enchilada. And if I come up a winner, Brotherhood Week, take me to dinner. Stick around, lady, and see the boy who's gonna bite. See that boy start moving right. Stick around, lady, and
Sammy Davis Jr., whose voice, says Strauss, was an inspiration. Sure, he would bend notes, shift harmonies, and change phrasings to suit his own particular vocal style. And Strauss, who was nothing if not deferential, had his work cut out, keeping his melodies intact. But it was satisfying nonetheless to free up his classical credentials in a jazz context. One number from Golden Boy, I Wanna Be With You, came out as close to a jazz blues improvisation as any Broadway song before or since. This wasn't a love duet, this was a love-making duet. voices of Sammy Davis and Paula Wayne entwined as no Broadway show before Golden Boy dared entwine them. But if musicalizing Golden Boy was bold, adding songs to one of the most adored movie classics of all time, All About Eve, was, in the words of Betty Comden and Adolf Green, the brilliant writing duo brought in to rewrite the show's original book, like placing yourself squarely at the wrong end of the critical shooting gallery. There were, they said, millions of fiercely loyal aficionados who love and cherish every frame, word and gesture with the defensive clucking passion of an outraged mother hen. Even so, All About Eve needed to become more about Margot Channing, because the musical version, Applause, was definitely all about its charismatic star, Lauren Bacall. She walked off with a Tony Award, so did the show. But let me say here and now that the score had an attitude that was all Strauss's. His ability to find musical ways of tarnishing the showbiz glitz of the setting was subtle but devastating. Lee Adams' lyrics were pretty caustic too. Enter Lauren Bacall with a few pointers to survival.
Welcome to the theatre, to the magic, to the fun. Where painted trees and flowers grow, and laughter rings fortissimo, and treachery's sweetly done. Now you've entered the asylum, this profession unique. Actors are children, playing hide and ego seek. So welcome, Miss Eve Harrington, to this business we call show. You're on your way to wealth and fame. Unsheathe your claws, enjoy the game. You'll be a bitch, but they'll know your name. From New York to Kokomo. Welcome to the theater, my dear. You'll love it so. Welcome to the dirty concrete hallways. Welcome to the friendly roaches, too. Welcome to the pinchers from the stagehands. It's the only quiet thing they do. Welcome to the Philadelphia critics. Welcome, Librium and Nebutol. Welcome to a life of laryngitis. Welcome to dark toilets in the hall. Welcome to the flop you thought would run for years. Welcome to the world of fears and cheers and tears. Welcome to the theater. With some luck, you'll be a pro. You'll work and slave and scratch and bite. You'll learn to kill with sheer delight. You'll only come alive at night when you're in a show.
A razor-tongued Lauren Bacall in Applause. Welcome to the theatre. And with welcomes like that, who needs farewells? A storming song. Charles Strauss has always been tempted by the unlikely and the ambitious. With his stylistic versatility, why not? There was Nick and Nora, Comden and Green's adaptation of Ibsen's A Doll's House. There was one about Queen Victoria called I and Albert, which perhaps should have been called Albert and One, a project which tapped into his Anglophile leanings and which was gently dubbed Singing in the Rain, R-E-I-G-N. And with Alan J. Lerner, he collaborated on Dance a Little Closer, which gave us this exquisite number.
There's always one there's always one you can't forget. One
Julie Andrews there with a real gem from Dance a Little Closer. There's always one you can't forget. And there was more than one you couldn't forget from the show Strauss wrote with Stephen Schwartz, Rags. The setting was New York City in 1910 at the height of the great wave of immigration flooding into America from Eastern Europe.
Tunes from around the block, tunes from afar. Beautiful tunes played by musicians who played for the Tsar. Penny a tune,
for a penny a tune.
Empty your pockets and fill up our hats. Music from the shops and the cold water flats. All for a penny a tune.
All over the east side, they're making a beat. Bob, what a time in the air. For kiddies and grannies in tenement crannies, working their fannies off there. They bring us the rhythm of Rivington Street. But just a penny a tune. For sure, though, we sweat and we stitch. Poor folks are poor, that's where music is rich. Music for night and the long afternoon.
For Strauss, the story of the immigrant woman Rebecca Hershkovitz, her loves, her traditions, her indestructibility, was always about the music. The mix of the music, the rhythms you'd never heard and would never hear again, the harmonies that slid by before you could name them. This was a score, perhaps his greatest, written from the gut and full of yearning.
This feeling come again when I was
safe at last, calm at last, free. Then I turn around, there he is, and the room is bright where he is. Don't I ever learn? No, I stand here wanting him.
I must be wanting.
I must have demons in my head
to feel this
dangerous, treacherous
need.
Then I see his eyes and they dance.
I see
they
her
hold
eyes.
Like a swift summer storm, let it pass. Like a hot midnight fever, let it pass. No more wanting things that can only
things that can be mine. Wanting her and this.
From Rags. There's something about the ache in Strauss's melodies that can reach inwards and take us out of ourselves. Some, like Children of the Wind from the same show, are writ so symphonic that they remind us that this is a composer of operas and concert pieces. Children of the Wind from Rags. But let's take ourselves back to where we began, with the first public airing of a song that defined an era and was the heart and soul of the show, which hit the jackpot for Charles Strauss and his writing partners Martin Charnin and Thomas Meehan, Annie. Here they are in person, sweating blood at the backers' audition for the show, and you can all but feel the uplift in the hard-bitten, heard-it-all audience. It was, and still is, a tune typical of one of the most optimistic and aspirational composers Broadway has ever produced. I'd have put money in.
The sun'll come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun. Just thinking about that tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow till there's none. When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick out my chin and grin and say, hang on till tomorrow.